Thank you, Chris. And then just a few verses from Paul's epistle to the Corinthians, which we're studying in the morning. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, and then I'll short verses from the Gospel of Luke. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, starting to read at verse 20. Where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, it pleased God through the folly of what we preach to save those who believe. For Jews demand signs and Greeks seek wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and folly to Gentiles. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. And then from Matthew chapter 12, start to read at verse 38. Then some of the teachers and Pharisees answered him, saying, Teacher, we wish to see a sign from you. But he answered them, An evil and adulterous generation seeks for a sign, but no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For just as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth. The men of Nineveh will rise up at the judgment with this generation and condemn it. For they repented the preaching of Jonah, and behold, someone greater than Jonah is here. The queen of the south will rise up at the judgment with this generation and condemn it. For she came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And behold, someone greater than Solomon is here. Well, as Chris has already been preparing you, we're beginning a sermon series in the book of Proverbs. And it's always good, I think, sometimes to give a reason as to why we're doing a sermon series in the book of Proverbs. And that, as I said, I think earlier, is that Proverbs is a unique book, and the wisdom literature in the Bible is its own unique genre. It's slightly different from the other books in the Bible in that they're part of the wisdom genre. You're familiar with the other types of books in the Bible. Obviously, there's the Torah, the law. The first five books of the Bible that give you the commandments as to how to live. But the commandments, when people give you commandments, you don't need wisdom. You just obey the commandments. That's simple. I mean, do not commit adultery means do not commit adultery. You don't have to, you know, think about it. You just don't do it because it's the command. It's the law. And then, of course, you've got the books that are concerned about history, that speak about God working in history, beginning in Genesis 1, God creating the world, and then redeeming a people, bringing a people, of calling a people to himself, rescuing them from slavery, bringing them out of Egypt, bringing them into covenant community with the king of the earth. And of course, the Gospels are history. The Gospels tell you about Jesus Christ of Nazareth, who came down this time not just to win a people from slavery, but to win a nation, a whole tribe, tongues, people from all the ends of the earth, to win them from the slavery of the fear of death, to give them life and hope beyond the grave. So it's you know, the Bible has law, it has history, it has prophecy that speaks of a coming Messiah in the Old Testament, and then the New Testament speaks about the coming day of judgment. But Proverbs is about becoming wise. So Proverbs applies where the law stops. When the law stops, you've got to think, well, there is no law that tells me how to behave in this situation. I could do the one thing or the other equally. There is no law that guides me. How do I make the right decision? Well, that's 97% of all the decisions you ever make will be in that category, where there's nothing, it's neither wrong or right to do something. So how do you do? Well, how do you know what to do? You need wisdom. This theme of wisdom is picked up straight away by Solomon, the great king and sage of Israel. He writes this book telling us that he's written this book to enhance wisdom, and instruction, and to give mankind prudence and knowledge and discretion. So that's why he's written this book, to give you wisdom, to give you discretion, to give you prudence. And as you go through the book of Proverbs, and we'll be traveling through the book for, 8 weeks or so, 9 weeks, up until Christmas, you'll discover that Solomon is concerned about the whole person. He's concerned about every area of your life. And so he it's a holistic approach that he adopts. And he's concerned about how men and women relate to each other. So he speaks about the way you conduct your relationships. That's very important for Solomon, how you conduct your relationships. How you relate to members of your family. I mean, we've all got members of our family that we didn't choose. Some of them can be very difficult, as you know. And we all know this. They're members of your family that do a number on your head. How do you relate to them? How do you approach them? That's wisdom. How do you relate, if you're not married, how do you relate to members of the opposite sex? Are they fair game sexually? I mean, the world would say yes, wouldn't they? The world would say yeah. Can you flirt with them? If so, how far do you go? How do you deal with all these relationships? And so Solomon has got a lot to say about that as to what constitutes wise behavior. Now, the British government is also, I think, massively interested in this whole area. It invests, I mean, somebody will tell me afterwards how much they actually invest, but they're investing in millions and millions and millions of pounds to try and teach young people how to be wise in their sexual behavior, aren't they? They're giving us information to schools, you know, how to do it, when to do it. Well, I won't go into the details. But most of the information, Solomon would think that most of the information that pours out from the British government is the height of folly. I mean, just let me tell you that for free. So he goes into all these areas, how parents should relate to their children, how children should relate to their parents. And then he goes, after talking about that, he starts talking about animals, how the wise man should treat his animals. And you think, Solomon, have you lost the plot? You're waxing lyrical on the relationship between parents and children. Suddenly you're talking about how people should treat animals. I mean, what's the connection? Solomon saw a connection that the British government's just seen recently. Did you read that in the paper? Apparently, well, Jane will tell us. Apparently, the government's giving vets advice. Is that right? Telling them, look out for abused animals. Why look out for abused animals? Well, if an animal comes in that's being abused, there may be other members of the family, inverted commas, weak and vulnerable people, children, adults, are also being abused. Because if you're willing to torture sentient creatures in the one area, you may do it in the other. So this information is going out to vet. Now, Solomon would say, well, that's obvious. He saw that connection 3 millennia ago. And so, as I say, he speaks every area of life. He touches upon it. Your attitude to food. Very important in the book of Proverbs. How you relate to money. Money is a skill. They've more or less learned it now, but we spend a lot of time trying to teach our children how to handle money. You do not have to spend it the minute you have it, you know. But they seem to think, as soon as out it goes, you try and teach them to save. That's a skill. Money is a powerful thing. You need skill and wisdom to know how to handle it. It's hard to handle it. You need wisdom. And Paul and Solomon talks about that. So he talks about money, he talks about work, he talks about the speech you use. How do you speak to people? What sort of speech comes out of your mouth when you're angry? That will tell you about a lot about the orientation of your heart. How you speak. What language? How does a wise man speak? How does a fool speak? Solomon goes into all of that. He then talks about those who are in powers of in authority over you. How do you deal with magistrates? How do you relate to the king? How do you relate to the prince? Well, Solomon says basically you should honor them and respect them, which is fine. I mean, we can all realize that. That's good. But does that mean you obey them all the time? Well, not necessarily. Okay, so when do you rebel? That takes wisdom. And if you're going to be respectful, how do you respectfully rebel? I mean, I think I know my default position. I know how to disrespectfully rebel. That's easy. We can do that with our eyes closed. Nobody needs wisdom to do that. That's obvious. How you disrespectfully rebel. How do you respectfully rebel? That takes wisdom. That takes emotional dexterity. That takes two words I was coming up with, summer. That takes flexible determination. Now that's hard. That's skill. And Solomon basically says, if you read this book, if you observe his teachings, if you take his teaching down into your heart, he says, what you will have is that your life, he says, your life will be delivered from evil. Follow my words, says Solomon, and your life will be delivered from evil. Discretion will guard it. Length of days will be yours. I mean, the promises that flow out of the book of Proverbs, that if you listen to him and you obey him and you put these principles into practice, he says, love and faithfulness will grace your life, and you'll find favor not only in the eyes of men, but also in the eyes of God. So it's worth studying. I hope I've given you a defense as to why we should be studying this. This is a royal sage. This is a royal philosopher. This is the king of Israel, whose words have endured for millennia. For three millennia, they've endured. And after you're dead, they will endure for millennia after you've gone. So it's probably worth, you know, us who are here one moment and gone the next, pausing just to study this book that speaks about eternal truths that will make you successful. So, you know, there's my apology. That's why we're studying it. Well then, how are we to learn? Very well, Solomon, okay, you've got this wisdom. How are we to learn it? Well, to begin with, let's just start from the basics, from the ground up. If you're going to be taught, you have to admit that you need teaching. Is that obvious? That's obvious, isn't it? If you don't think you need teaching, then there's no hope for you. But Solomon says at the very beginning, he says, no, this is for the simple. These words are for the simple. Now, in other words, in order to enter into wisdom, you've got to admit that you need teaching. Now, you know this. Caroline's been working at the high school for many, many years now, too many years, I sometimes think. And she teaches English. So she teaches English literature and English language. Guess who the most difficult students to teach are? I tell you, the cleverest. Okay? Those who are trying to seek entrance into the big universities. Those who are trying to seek entrance into Oxford and Cambridge. They come to Caroline and say, I've got this interview, you know, how shall I deal with it? And Caroline says, you know, she's a teacher. We should listen to her. She says, well, you know, my advice to you is to make connections between your subjects. So try and make a connection between what you've learned in English literature and your subject. And the guy goes, I'm doing psychology. And she says, well, yeah. Try and make connections between English literature and psychology. Why? Well, because you know, Carl Jung apparently thought that Shakespeare was had great psychological insight into humanity, and if you can make connections between Hamlet and Carl Jung, it might impress the tutors. Ah, puff, puff, puff. No, he says, got an A star in psychology. Don't need to study literature. You see, unteachable. He's wise in his own eyes. So off he trots. Off he trots to his little high-class university, and there's a tutor and says, have you made connections between Hamlet and Carl Jung? He's all over the place. Now, in the book of Proverbs, Lady Wisdom says she laughs at people when they do not listen to her. Caroline doesn't quite do that. But I'd be tempted to, ha! You didn't listen. Because the fool is unteachable. The fool thinks they are wise in their own eyes. And so right off from the start, I mean, I'm sorry to insult you at the very beginning of a sermon, but right off from the start, you've got to admit that you are simple and that you need instruction. Without that as a foundation stone, we're going nowhere in this course. So you need to, Solomon says, I'm writing this book to give prudence to the simple and discretion to the youth. So no matter how old you are, in a sense, he goes on to say, let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. So this book of wisdom is for those who are willing to admit that they need teaching because they're fools. If you're not there, if that's not your area, then I'm afraid Solomon, the book of Proverbs, will remain a closed book for you. And you can just be wise in your own eyes and lean on your own understanding and see where that gets you. And Lady Wisdom at the end of the age will come laughing at your folly. So, Solomon says, you know, this is for the foolish, this is for the simple. Now, Solomon is a great writer and he's got tremendous semantic range. So the book of Proverbs is really good to increase your vocabulary when it comes to talking about fools, because there are lots of examples of foolish people in the book of Proverbs. And they basically fall into three groups. Bruce Waltke, the Old Testament theologian, has done a great study on this. And he says basically what you have in the book of Proverbs are the gullible, the mocker, and the fool. And the clue is you've got to decide for yourself this evening into which group you fall. Okay, so that's a little test for you. Which group are you going to fall in? Now, let me also tell you this. You'll be able to recognize everybody else. Okay. He fits in that. Oh, that's my husband all over just there. And what you won't see is yourself. Okay, what you won't see yourself. So pray that God opens your eyes and shows you who you are. So first of all, you have the gullible. Who are they? Well, the gullible are those who are unformed. Okay, they're gullible. They're uncommitted. They're the youth of Israel that Solomon is addressing. They're uncommitted. And therefore, because they're uncommitted and they have no defined shape, they're very easily swayed by somebody who comes along and speaks in their ear. And therefore, they're senseless, they're silly, they're incredibly optimistic. They're lovely people to be around. Lovely. Because they're very simple. Everything's always going to work out. There's no problems in life. They don't, because they're not committed to any particular worldview except the one that's the prevailing worldview that they don't even realize that they're committed to. But apart from, so they're senseless. They're gullible. They're foolish. They're like, I don't want to be sexist, but they're like, well, I will be then. They're like silly adolescent girls. Going out in a party on a Saturday night. And I've had, in my time, I've had two daughters and two others, so four teenage girls. And they go out and giddy and happy. And they come across sophisticated older guys. And they come back home. They say, Dad, guess what? I say, what? He said he loved me. Oh, please. Gullible. They believe these sweet nothings that older, mature, sophisticated men whisper into their lovely shell-like ears, and they're all over the place. Gullible. Now, I don't want to be sexist, because Solomon, in the book of Proverbs, has a lot to say about young men who are just the same. Young men who go out into this world and they cannot distinguish, says Solomon, between Lady Wisdom on the one hand and Dame Folly on the other. And in other words, they can't distinguish between the woman who will be good for them and the toxic woman. Just as they're toxic men, so also they're toxic women. And basically Solomon says what these men are like. Well, you've met them. We all know them. They're just ruled by their instincts. Paul talks about the pagan as being a creature of instinct. Just does what he feels right in the heat of the moment. Why? Uncommitted. No guiding, overarching principle. No word to direct them. So they just do what they feel like. And so Solomon says when they come across this sophisticated woman who spreads her couch with colored linens from Egypt, who's perfumed her bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon, and whose words drop as smooth as honey, well, says Solomon, they're like stags caught in a net. They're like birds that have been pierced by an arrow. They're brought low because these people, these young men, on the one hand, they like the trap. They're in love with the trap. They argue to themselves. They say, well, these are my instincts. This is the way I've been created. These feelings I have are natural and good. It's the way I am. And so they live their lives on this immediate emotional level. And they're very, very gullible. Their big mantra is, we should live and learn. You heard that? Live and learn. If a parent did that to their child, it would be definitely defined as child abuse. I'm not going to teach you what's good and bad to eat. You just live and learn. Live and learn. No, 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 says Solomon. You don't live and learn. You learn and then you live. Do not be naive. Learn in order to live. That's the first, the gullible. Then you have the mocker. Now, the mocker is the complete antithesis of the gullible. You'll have met him or her as well. Whereas the gullible is easily led because he's uncommitted, the mocker is very committed, but to the wrong thing. So he can be is completely unteachable. He knows what is right. And he speaks all the time because he's just that sort of person who knows what's right. He's speaking the truth as he sees it all the time. And because he's so extremely confident that he's got a handle on the truth, although in a minority, he's willing to impose his minority views on the majority and even to the extent of destroying the community. That's the mocker. Completely unteachable. And if you try to debate with the mocker, never try to debate with the mocker, says Solomon. What will happen is that the mocker just resorts to ridicule. He doesn't answer your argument. He just insults you. He just relies on invective and bullying. He won't mount a defense. He won't mount an argument. He's just mocking everything that comes his way. He's the mocker. Then you have the fool. So you've got the gullible, the mocker, and then you've got the fool. Now, the fool's a very interesting character. Because the fool lives life in such a way that he refuses to see that the laws that are out there need to be obeyed. Okay? Shall I just repeat that? The fool is the person who refuses to see that the laws that are out there need to be obeyed. Now, to a certain extent, we all recognize, we'll understand that there are laws out there. I mean, they're natural laws, aren't they? Natural laws. That you have to take into account in your life. You can't ignore them. They're there. If you ignore them, you will suffer terribly. For example, the law of gravity. It's there 24/7, 365 days of the year. It'll be there forever. It'll be there till the end of time. It's the law of gravity. If you ignore the law of gravity, you'll come to a sticky end. Okay. So there are certain laws that are out there that you just have to obey in order to lead a skillful and wise life. Likewise, there are food laws as well, as Caroline reminds me very often. If I eat 3 Danish pastries every day and drink 2 cups of very strong sweet coffee every morning, I'll probably hyperventilate and die of a heart attack in a year's time. Why? It's the law. Skillful living, wisdom, will inform you not to do that. So there are laws out there. And a wise person is attentive to their laws, obeys them, and moves his life around the laws. The laws come primary, and he adapts himself around the laws. And so so Solomon says to the fool, he says things like this, fool, go look at the ant. Okay? He says, fool, go look at the locusts. Fool, go look at the rock badgers. And why he's saying this, he says, because the fool sometimes thinks that he can be successful in life without doing any work. Have you ever met people like that? They're always trying to make money quickly without doing any work. And so they think there's such a thing as easy money. And so their whole philosophy in life, the philosophy of the fool, is to try and evade the laws of the universe and to try and make money very easily. And Solomon says, look, basically it's not like that. If you're going to be successful in life, if you're going to be prosperous, on the whole, you know, 70%, 80% of the time, it's those who work hard, diligently, become successful and enjoy materialist success. The fool looks at that law and refuses to acknowledge it. He thinks he can get easy money by doing nothing. And so Solomon says to him, no, no, go look at the ant, you sluggard. Go look at the ant, you fool. There are all these ants. How many ants are in an ant's nest? I don't know, 30,000. Who organizes them? Who tells them that all throughout the summer they're to be collecting food so they can survive through the winter? Do they have gang masters? I don't think they do. They just do it. Why? Because they're wise. They understand the nature of the world in which they live. And, says Solomon, these animals sometimes are so successful, like lizards, that they can even live in kings' houses. But the fool, you see, looks at all this and says, ah, no, That doesn't apply to me. That law doesn't apply to me. I can make money quick. I don't have to work hard. You fool, says Solomon. You'll bring yourself and your family and all your relationships down into ruin and destruction. Now here's, I'm going to say something about Proverbs in connection to the other ancient Near Eastern literature. Because you're probably thinking, Nigel, that's okay. That's good, Solomon, that's good, you know. Bring up a child the way that he goes, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. Yeah, that's generally true. Bring up your children well, and, you know, on the whole, they'll be good citizens, yes. Look at the ant, work hard, you'll be prosperous, yes. Do you need the Bible to tell you that? Don't, do you? You can go to Akkadian literature. You can go to pagan literature. You can go to secular psychologists. They'll tell you all the same things. So what's unique about the book of Proverbs? But you see, in the book of Proverbs, what you have is the king. He's the great king, King Solomon, and he's talking to his prince. And he's talking to his prince, and he's saying that in this world, he's going to meet Dame Wisdom and Lady Folly. And what happens is, the prince is always going to be, there's a temptation. The prince is always going to be attracted to Dame Folly. And so there's this storyline, if you like, that's running through the book of Proverbs. Is who is the king, who is the prince going to choose? Is he going to choose Dame Folly or Lady Wisdom? That's the great question. What are the young men? What are you going to choose? Who are you going to choose to be allied to? That's the question that's running throughout the book of Proverbs. And of course, that technique is also there in Akkadian literature and Egyptian literature of the prince, of the king talking to the prince, asking him to choose between these two ways of living. But what's the difference then when it comes to Proverbs? There is one huge difference. One huge difference. All this other wisdom about working hard, it's all good. But pagans can tell you that. What's the one big thing that Proverbs is driving at? Well, this one big thing separates Proverbs from all the other ancient Near Eastern wisdom literature. It makes the difference between chalk and cheese, night and day, God and man. And it is found in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7. Because here is where we get down to the heart of the book of Proverbs. Because Proverbs says, at the end of the day, it is the fear of the Lord that is the beginning of knowledge, and fools despise wisdom and instruction. Now, what's Solomon telling us there? He's telling us there that wisdom, true wisdom, can only be found ultimately, the end of the day. All these other wisdom techniques that I've given you, Sir Solomon, about leading a successful life, about raising your children, about how to negotiate with rulers and princes and so on, all those other things, pagans can tell you. But the one thing the pagan cannot tell you is to how to relate your life to God, who is the source of wisdom, because it is the fear of the Lord where all this begins. Without the fear of the Lord, all wisdom is meaningless. But this, you see, is what the real fool, the utterly gullible, and the chronic mocker refuse to see. Yes, they see the natural laws clearly enough. They see those, and they can have a certain skill in navigating that. But what they cannot see, or what they do not, or are unable to see, is that as well as there being natural laws, there are also moral, theological, and spiritual laws to which they are blind. Now, in a way, that's understandable, isn't it? In a way, it's understandable. Because a natural law will exact its toll immediately should you disobey it. So, for example, if I go to a fire and take out a coal with my bare hands, the natural law will ensure that I am burnt horribly. So there's an immediate correlation. So even really foolish people like me can think, I better not do that. But with the moral law, it's not so obvious. If I go out, for example, and commit adultery, what's going to happen tomorrow?
Nothing. If Caroline doesn't find out. I can go on for years. Be fine. The world's not falling about me. I'm not getting burnt. I'm still making money at work. I violated this moral law. What's not to like? You see. But Solomon says, don't you understand that there are these moral, spiritual, and theological laws that if you violate them, there will be tremendous responses later on. Ultimately, of course, on the day of judgment. But even later on in your life, there could be huge repercussions because of your moral failures, because you violated a moral law. But you see, the fool doesn't see them or refuses to see them because he doesn't want to see them. So what happens if he lies? Somebody in your family has put you under pressure, you lie. Yeah, great. Got out of that one. What are the consequences? Nothing. You think. But then one lie leads to another lie. And then leads to another lie. And leads to another lie. And ultimately what can happen is that eventually you're so consumed in your web of lies that your whole world comes crashing down around you. A little lie in your insurance form? Who's going to see that? There's not an immediate reaction as there is in the natural law. So Solomon says, no. Don't you see, you fool? There is a connection because Yahweh, the creator of the heavens and the earth, he sees all this. On one day you will meet him on the day of judgment. Solomon says, a prostitute can be had for a loaf of bread, but another man's wife preys on your very life. Can a man scoop fire into his lap without his clothes being burned? Can a man walk on hot coals without his feet being scorched? No is the answer. Don't you see these moral, theological, and spiritual laws, you fools? So, how shall I get into this book of Proverbs? Well, let me read it. If you want wisdom, the book of Proverbs is for you. Read, mark, learn, and inwardly digest. But I'll let you into a secret. Read Proverbs. You should read Proverbs. But you should also know that Solomon stopped listening to his own wisdom later on in his life. Even though the Queen of Sheba traveled from Yemen across the empty quarters of Saudi Arabia to sit and listen at Solomon's feet and was amazed by his teaching. Even though that was the start of his life, towards the end of his life, Solomon was leaning on his own understanding. He thought he was really clever. And he forgot the fear of the Lord. Why did he forget the fear of the Lord? Because he feared Egypt more. He feared Babylon more. He feared Assyria more. And so he started making alliances with Egypt, alliances with Babylon, alliances with Assyria. And at the end of his life, he had 700 wives and 400 concubines. And at the end of his life, when he died, the whole nation went into civil war. And he lost everything. So by all means, absolutely by all means, read the book of Proverbs. But remember, Solomon failed at the end, which is good in a way. It's good because what the book of Proverbs does is drive you forward. It drives you forward into the New Testament. It drives you forward into Jesus Christ of Nazareth, who is the wisdom of God. Jesus is the wisdom of God. And Jesus comes as the wise man par excellence. And Jesus makes promises that are much greater than Solomon's. Because Jesus comes as the wise man, as one who is greater than Solomon. And Jesus offers us eternal life if you give your life to him. And people say, well, oh, give my life to him. Why should I do that? Give my life. But listen to the exchange. Listen, this is the deal. And tell me what's not to like. Jesus Christ of Nazareth says to you, give me your folly. Give me your folly. Give me your gullibility. Give me your mockery. I will bear your mockery. I will suffer the consequences of your gullibility. I will bear the consequences of your foolishness. You give that to me, and I will give you my wisdom. And my wisdom will lead you to paradise. My wisdom will bring you to heaven. So that's the exchange. You give me your wisdom, your folly, and I'll give you my wisdom. That's the deal. Why don't people believe it? I mean, I can't say. I mean, that's like a no-brainer to me. But why don't people do it? I'll tell you why. People don't do it because they look at the wisdom of God and they think it's foolishness. That's the trouble. They look at Jesus Christ of Nazareth and says, that's stupid. Look at him. Look how he died. That's awful. How stupid. How foolish. How senseless of God to come to earth as a baby born of a virgin. That's just stupid. How stupid. How foolish to end up on a cross. How foolish to be mocked and ridiculed, spurned and rejected by everybody. That is foolishness. But to those who understand, that's wisdom. That's the wisdom of God. And the great question ultimately, I think, that Solomon asks you and asks me is, are you going to lean on that wisdom? Or are you going to lean on your own wisdom? Leaning on your own wisdom is going to be, says Solomon, it's going to be like leaning on a wall that's not been well built. You'll put all your weight on it and you'll go crashing over. Leaning on your own wisdom will be like putting in your wall and out comes a scorpion and bites you. That's what leaning on your own wisdom is like. But if you lean on the wisdom that Jesus gives, if you give him your folly and embrace his wisdom, you'll be wise unto salvation. Amen.